Welcome to your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Dunn, where you can catch the Boy Wonder on Mondays and Fridays, and he's back, everyone. He's back from Morocco, and I'm hoping to have him on the show this Thursday as a special guest to tell us about his excellent adventure, and I'm very confident that it was. So stand by. We hope to hear more from Kevin Bennett. Meanwhile, today, my special guest is well-known to those who are immersed in 9/11 research. He filmed the dramatic, authentic footage of the Twin Towers on 9/11 from across the Hudson River. He has created several documentaries widely regarded as among the very best available about 9/11, entitled 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken, and more, which he will tell us about. He created and supervises the website 911researchers.com, which is even featured on 911scholars.org. If you check out the icons in the top left and the top right, you'll see the top right. The top left is the icon for 911 Scholars. Top right is the icon for 911 Researchers. Great pleasure to welcome to the show Rick Siegel. Rick, welcome to the Dynamic Duo.
Hey, welcome. I'm happy to be here. Jim, how you doing?
Good. How you been?
All right. Yeah, pretty good. It's been nice and sunny out here. I've been near Morocco, but not keeping an eye on Barrett.
You're in Morocco, too?
I'm near it, you know. I should have gone down there, but I figured he'll probably cover the area much better.
Well, he's in a pretty good shape to do it, since he's fluent in Arabic and French, and, you know, of course, a convert to Islam and knows his way around, and he's married to a native Moroccan woman.
Yeah, so you're eating good couscous.
I think so. Rick, I really wanted to have you on for your take on the current state of 9/11 research, where it's come from, where it's going. Before we get there, though, I think it might be useful just for you to, you know, fill in a couple additional points about yourself and how you got involved in this 9/11 research for the benefit of our audience.
How I got involved. Well, I just released that 9/11 Raw, 911raw.com. It's the complete raw footage, and I did it in full resolution so that there was no compression or anything done on it. That way you can get all the details, because I see that there's so much being done with the pixelization, and you don't have the actual document in your hand. It's worse than a Xerox, because you're really dealing with problematic stuff that people aren't picking up that happen when pixels get enlarged. So.
That doesn't have to happen, does it, when you make a copy, or does it invariably happen even when you make a copy?
Absolutely, no matter what. Matter of fact, I got a couple screenshots for some of that because of 911researchers.com, a lot of the people involved in the TV fakery, and I was watching some of the stuff, and I thought the cartoon was coming in front of the building, I got some other stuff, and when most pixels come across different colors, they scramble up on these cameras, and the problem is not having the original footage, and not even knowing what the camera was, so that you know what the pixels are doing, because they do be funny things, especially when they're going deep into these pixels. It's going to be a problem, you know? So, I saw somebody in 9/11, because like I did the music video, and you have to compress it to put it on. I mean, there's compression, even on the DVD. So we put 9/11 Eyewitness, it's a great DVD, and it's the raw footage and stuff, but to fit 2 hours onto a DVD, you have to compress. So if you only want not to compress, that's why 9/11 Raw is important for researchers, and I put it out for the researchers only, is so that you can see the difference between a bird and a pixel that somebody thinks is a flying saucer. What's that pixel? You know it's flying across. Must be a rocket. No, it's a bird. Watch how it moves. And you have to get the bird. You have to have the full on. And it's a DVD will only hold 1 hour where it's not compressed. I only got 52 minutes on there without any compression. So the resolution is absolutely the best I can give and deliver off of it. And it was a 3CCD with full 16 kilohertz stereo. And the stereo had a stereo shotgun mic. So you're sitting with a very good Sennheiser shotgun mic, and you can actually tune in on the two tracks, the closer to the radio or closer to the river, so that you can hear what comes up going across the river. And this is all important, because if you make a judgment and you want that evidence, and it's available like that, it's much better than getting funky copies. As you probably know, when you start to do the frames, you were in with the JFK stuff, and if you have the film frames versus somebody's copy of them, or as you know, like even if I got a copy from a friend off of the actual film, where, you know, someone could have there's too much to go wrong. It's like, it's an incredible thing. Normally somebody has to edit and cherry pick or get away a piece of evidence and next thing you know, their stories. It doesn't have to be disinfo. It can be, it's misinformation that becomes, you know, not fun at that point.
Well, one of the tasks we confronted there was actually creating an improved version that removes some of the forms of distortion where we had the benefit of a fellow who's an expert in electromagnetism and who's a genius at this sort of thing. His name is John P. Costella. He's got a Ph.D. in physics. And he just did brilliant work in creating a new version of the Zapruder film, a technically enhanced one, where the colors are more vivid and the frames are more accurate and so forth and faithful to whatever might have been the original, although we know from multiple forms of proof that this is a recreation. And anyone out there who's interested in the alteration or the recreation of the Zapruder film should go to assassinationscience.com and scroll down to the symposium where there are three pieces, one of mine on refuting the magic bullet theory, a piece by David W. Manick, MD, PhD, who's done all this work on the autopsy x-rays and photographs, and then a symposium by John B. Costello taking you through the Zapruder film and showing all the internal evidence that this is a recreation. Something I like about your work, Rick, is that you have so much technical competence in relation to these issues. That's a wonderful combination. That's one reason I so prized John Costella for all of his work in relation to JFK.
Right. Well, I worked at that time for online TV, so I had all this equipment. I actually got that encoded and up on the Internet within minutes after I turned the tape off. So it was out there for everybody to see. At that point, we just thought it was a horror story and nothing more. I left that city as damaged goods because seeing that I was one of the victims of the awe and shock and awe.
Shock and awe, yes.
Yeah, and when I saw the Patriot Act come in and I'm reading that if you disagree with the laws of this government, you're the enemy, there are so many laws I disagree with that they do. I think they're mostly illegal, and you just need tons of money to try and fight these idiots. So I moved away so that I don't have to live as a criminal. And but it's getting worse there now too. And stuff that's happening in the 9/11, it's phenomenal. How do you like it? You know, you're sitting there on that 9/11 blogger. It's more like being in Iraq getting shelled by your friends. You know.
Because
they
start pounding on me.
Yeah, it's like you put up an article and you're writing and it sounds right. Everything sounds pretty good, but the stuff that comes back at you is sort of like what probably our troops are getting in Iraq, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty clear that Blogger has a mission, and its mission has to do with channeling research into a very narrow spectrum where you can say all you want about thermite, as long as it's positive, of course, and if you say anything else, no matter how well-founded, you take a beating. We'll be right back here after this break with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is responsible for some of the most important documentaries ever produced about the events of 9/11. Fortuitously, he was across the Hudson River and in a position to take film recording of these events as they were taking place at the time, and he is also responsible for creating one of the most important websites dealing with 9/11, 9/11researchers.com, which I encourage everyone to visit. It's far more responsible than most of the alternatives. Pleasure to welcome you back, Rick. Thanks for being with us. This is Rick Siegel.
Okay, thank you again.
Rick, tell us a little bit about how you came to take that historic footage.
Well, I woke up in that morning because I heard an explosion. And as I get up every morning, I turn on the radio and started to listen to hear explosions all the time in New York and all in Hudson. So it wasn't anything big. And I heard that a small passenger plane had hit the at the tower, so that's not a big deal either, and they started smoking. So I'm
Rick,
like, I'm
just, a suggestion, it's difficult to hear you. If you pull back the phone just a little bit, about an inch further from your mouth, I think it'll work better.
Okay, how about now? Is it good enough?
I think that's better. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Okay, so, and then I got up and went out because after I heard the second explosion, and instead of the second plane that hit the tower, so I got the cameras and hopped onto my little zappy scooter and went the one block to the pier near Hudson Street and the train station in Hoboken, and started shooting the two smoking buildings. They looked like two smoking cigars. So that was about it. There was nothing much. I put on the radio as a background, which I guess was a sort of genius, but what it did was give a complete time frame of everything that happened for the next 30, 40 minutes as these buildings were demolished. So anyway, that's, like I said, with that stereo microphone in 911, you can actually tune out the radio a little more and tune in those explosions to hear them better as they come rolling across the river. And, of course, you still have to time slide it. You have to count your seconds to realize that something's really going wrong. The video, when I put out that music video, the building didn't fall. And when you start seeing things shooting up, it's an impossibility. And also, Jim, I just identified that Chopper 4. And I've been saving it up to announce on the show that Chopper 4 I got off of Israeli news. And apparently there's a way this really moves people, at least in that chopper. That was the one that was hanging over the towers just before the South Tower went over and had whatever those flashes were. But this was the one that I saw with the guy with who's hanging out on what do they call it, a winch, where they try to haul up the people and they rescue.
Yeah.
And I saw that, and I matched it up with the Israeli newscast and matched up, you know, where the helicopters were and the timing of it, and this is the helicopter, although they have cut footage out of their news broadcast.
Experiment. Move your phone around different positions. Let me tell you where we get the better broadcast quality here, because it's still very hard to make out your words. Maybe bring the phone a little closer, but drop it just a half an inch or something, and let's try that.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Rick. You know, you're talking about the explosions. Did you? I know you captured all of these helicopters, which is utterly fascinating in your footage. I seem to recall you did not capture a plane hitting the South Tower. Is that right?
No, I captured more. I wasn't out for those for the planes, and I got to apologize to everybody for that. But you can't get everything, and you don't know.
Well, I know it's so easy. For example, to talk about the collapse of the Twin Towers too, when actually we know they were turned into dust, and they didn't actually collapse, but they were destroyed, which is why I like to emphasize destruction or demolition rather than the word collapse. I've even corrected Stephen Jones on that in the program before. And when I was in New York, this guy Ron Wyke, who was hosting a debate between me and Mark Roberts, but of course it was actually me and the two of them, questioned my use of the word destruction as though it were somehow less precise than collapse. But of course, collapse implies a particular mode of destruction, or at least a sequence of events that actually didn't take place here. So a more general term like destruction or demolition is far preferable.
Right. Yeah, that building exploded. There's, when I described it, it was like a Roman candle. When a Roman candle goes off.
Your voice is better now, by the way. This is pretty good.
All right, good.
Keep going.
When the candle goes off, right, you know, it shoots stuff out the top, and it's bubbling off the sides. And when you look at the video and you see you see that building, it's bubbling up.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there's pieces falling, and that's where you can see stuff is going upwards in the earth. So it's not right. This building is not falling. There's all kinds of, because like you can see it spewing stuff out, and it's the guts of the building are spewing out a couple of football fields away. There's a huge problem. Now we're stuck with, what do you want to do? I don't know if the 9/11 movement, I don't know if we're going all in the right direction, because you're trying to get them to investigate themselves or admit their own guilt, or, and my father goes, well, who is it? And I go, God, it's like so many people, and people can't think in those terms that it could be that many people. But if you look way back in our history, those people never disappeared and have been around for centuries. They were just bigger families and more connected. I found it funny that there was a DeCosta, the Times, just found out, just printed, that Bush might have had a grandfather who was bankrolling the Nazis in the Harriman Bank. So it's like, even though this is old news, I mean, it must be 5 or 6 years that...
Did you change the way you were holding the phone, Rick? Because it was better before. It's gone back to the way it was earlier.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Is it better now?
Yeah, it is better now. Yeah.
Right, this is a good thing. Sorry, I'm going to hold here.
I think you have such an interesting perspective. I'd be interested in your point of view about how the whole 9/11 movement has developed and where you think it is now and where you would like to see it go.
Where I'd like to see it go? Well, I don't know where it's...
Where
did it come from, Rick? Well, because it's all frustrating. People who see that we've had a crime made against us. So and now you have to get down to the basics. What's really is wrong? Look, people are going to break, huh?
Yeah, this is Jim Fesser, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, Rick Siegel. We'll be right back. Today, however, my special guest is Rick Siegel, who's been responsible for some of the most important documentaries ever made about 9/11, including 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken. And Rick, you mentioned you have a new video out. Could you tell us about it?
9/11 Raw. Can you hear me? Am I coming
in
halfway
decent?
All right. 9/11 Raw, 911raw.com, which is just the raw footage. It's basically for researchers because it doesn't have any commentary at all. It's look here, get in my shoes, and see what I saw and rewind it and see what I didn't really remember to look at. Part of this is the magic show that you're not looking at the right things at the right time and there's other things to watch. So this uncompressed version is very important for all the researchers out there. And
9/11 Raw, and it can be obtained by way of 911researchers.com?
No, 911raw.com or Video Seconds. That's the other. Video Seconds has got it at a discount on their store. I think it's only $12.95, so it's one of the cheapest things to get, and it's you would now have the real deal and no commentary, so that way it can't be debunked because there's nothing to debunk. And if you look at it, you see it's what it is. You got all of the radio footage too. It's like every one of the reports, and there's no reports about falling buildings, only about explosions, pre-explosions, reports of explosions, stolen helicopters in Washington, D.C. that haven't been talked about, police helicopters. It's got the guy who came on and said he saw a helicopter coming over and then the fireball. And the guy at New York told him, tell the guy it was an airplane.
Tell the guy it was an airplane.
Yeah, and the guys in New York are telling the newscaster on the scene in D.C. who's interviewing the military witness who saw the helicopter go in just before the fireball. That he should be corrected that it was an airplane and not a... And this is coming out of the New York guy.
Who's the source of the correction? Who's the one who's saying he should tell him it was a plane?
Actually, I forgot that. It's in the broadcast. It would be off of 1010 News. The newscasters are. Yeah, that's right. Most of the names are there, too. And then there was the student who actually gave his name, too, who absolutely describes the WTC-7's complete demolition with the shockwave going up and all the glass blowing out and then the building coming down. And he's interviewed right there on the spot, I'm shutting down the camera after I filmed the WTC going down. So almost more important than the video is some of this audio record, which you're sitting through while the building is just burning, and there's what I call eye candy. Again, remember, I was onlinetv.com, and we were doing mostly entertainment all around the world. So when I'm watching just those smoldering buildings, there's not much there to happen. It's the radio that's more important. So, but it is 38 minutes long, just of those two, between the two collapses, destructions of the buildings. And both of them you can see as they spew out their guts and watch all the tons of stuff being thrown everywhere. So, and like I said, we finally identified that the chopper And from the video, you can see all the actual points of where he was and where he cut his video out. It would be nice to get some of these videos from these choppers, because they're now, if I can identify them, perhaps we can get the air actual footage.
Were they news choppers or military? Or police?
This looked like it was military and unmarked, because they had it, they show it in the air, they show where, you know, and I can point where my video shows them up there, and their video matches what's happening in mine. And then they show themselves landed, and there's the helicopter, and the North Tower collapses. This is during the South Tower collapse, Chopper 4. So there they are in the background as they have landed, and that chopper has no markings, absolutely none, no markings at all.
Extensively, this whole business was stage managed.
Yeah, I think it was. And this was on the only Israeli news clip that I found. So it becomes more. Now I'm playing into all the other idiots out there, as you see, it's like they're split them all into the various camps. You're watching all the. You're part of it. You're part of one of the camps.
Are you saying that the Israeli news footage was more accurate than what was going out around New York?
It's like that I identify this, and it becomes that the only footage is coming out of the Israeli news, and that their chopper's unmarked. And now it's endless people like Alex Jones, who invited me in Chicago to come to L.A., said, please edit out the choppers. Charlie doesn't like the choppers, and I don't like the choppers. He wanted me to edit my footage and take out the choppers.
Charlie Sheen?
Well, this was Alex Jones.
Yeah, I know, but even when he said Charlie, it must mean Charlie.
Yeah.
And he himself don't like the choppers?
Right. So they wanted him out, and I was like, hey, I can't take the stuff out. You know, he says, well, don't put any more in. I don't know. And I thought that was weird, too, but, you know, I wanted to go to L.A. We had a good time, and I got to show the film, and even though the choppers were on there, then they wouldn't talk to me anymore.
This is very strange. I mean, those choppers that you captured in your video may be among the most important clues as to what was going on.
Yeah, well, that's why I think the identification is now even more important, but it plays into hands like into Hofschmidt and stuff, into the racist camp. And I don't like that. And to get any deeper means we have to go and ask Israeli news, who the hell was that? And where's the whole video, including the stuff that's missing in that news report?
Well, there are plenty of indications that there was Israeli foreknowledge, if not complicity, in these events. So, you know, looking in the direction of Israeli involvement, if you're interested in the truth, is obviously an appropriate thing to do. It also has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. I mean, there's a gross distinction that has to be made between attacking somebody or a group because of their religion or their ethnic origin versus, say, attacking a government or a state such as Israel or the Israeli government, especially for specific policies or actions it may have taken, which has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. I mean, this has been used as an all-purpose excuse or barrier or obstacle to legitimate criticism of Israel and the Israeli government for decades now, and I think it's quite sickening.
Right. So it's definitely there, and that's right. You have to step even more carefully, and it's ridiculous, but there it is, and I'm not stepping back from letting that be known that the helicopters, I think, were from Israel, that they're the only ones with that newscast, and we'd like to get that newscast out of them. Not just the newscast. I want all their footage and to know who was in that helicopter, because
it's fascinating that they were prepared to get those helicopters out there so fast.
Right. And the Israelis
on the building and across the river there who were filming it all, and of course when they were arrested and incarcerated for 4 or 5 months until Michael Chertoff, who was then the assistant to the Attorney General, had them released, and when they returned to Israel, as I'm sure you well know, the three of them went on television and said they were there to document the destruction of the Twin Towers.
Well, that's why I was there on the pier, too. I wasn't there to do it, but that's what I had to do that day.
That's what you had to do, but you were doing it spontaneously. They were there deliberately set up to do it with champagne and celebrating.
No, I didn't have any celebrations happening. It was mostly shocking, you know.
We'll be right back with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo. Stand by. My special guest today is Rick Siegel. who's produced several of the most important documentaries related to 9/11, including 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken. Rick, with your concurrence, I'm going to invite anyone there who'd like to call in to call us during the second hour. The number is 1-800-259-5791. 800-259-5791. So if anyone has a question for Rick or for me, please feel free, call on in. We'll start taking calls at about 5 minutes after the hour. Rick, why don't you tell us more about your reflections on your take of what actually was going on 9/11. I'm sure many in the audience would like to know.
Yeah, it's, you know, the way it was going on that day. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Am I doing okay? All right, on that day, it was, I don't know, the reflections of the scene, the building explode, you know, disbelief, you know, when you watch it again, it's like if you watch 9/11 now, you put yourself in the shoes, you watch that building exploding like this. No one's telling you collapse. No one's telling you pancakes. It's no pancakes. And you go, you're just in disbelief. And the worst thing I sat there, and that's why I in my videos, I turn to the camera and I go, where were you guys? Is that they didn't show up for at least an hour after they hit. So, and the building had already gone down, and they're still not there. So you're wondering where your wonderful military was, you know, and I don't even care about a stand-down. It's like the, when we were kids, when we went to school, the first thing we learned was, your dog eats your homework, you pay. So there's no excuse that you were playing games that night, you were having, your shoes weren't tied properly, and you couldn't get your, you know, this is professional. This is like, this is our, supposedly what we put our security into, and that's where 9/11 has to go. And we have to do that, they're going to have to embrace the whole concept. The government is not something that we put in place. It's something that was put in place on top of us. That we were born with hundreds of years of corrupt laws put over us that were bought with cigarettes and beer and 100 years ago and put in place. And these are laws that we've had to live with, our fathers have had to live with. We have to live with the fake money because in 1931 this jerk took all the money away from our grandfathers. So in the way we're living with this today, and people go, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, sooner or later, somebody has to get up and do something about it. And it's not going to happen if you've got a false opposition like Ron Paul out there, and like, he sounds so good, but he's not going to make it. He's just going to pound you down. Like, well, you really do have some kind of shot at a voice, but if you really trace it, you see that all the families still control all the money and all the activities. So in, with the 9/11 truth movement, that's all controlled too. It's all been split up. The minute you got into the power structure, I think you're on the end now, Jim, where you've been pushed out, even though you got your credentials and you got a name, that's shoving you right out the door too, because you're actually probably looking for the truth. And if you're really doing that, you can't get up there in the top. So they're not going to let you be there. If you look at my 9/11 Truth.org at their advisory board, it's like a total joke with that guy, Burks. He's a known spy. He's working with UFOs while he's sitting there translating for presidents. Come on, this is a joke. And he's dancing with Flaumann's gay nightclubs in San Francisco. And Flaumann's up, you know, how the hell that happened with you, man? Flaumann taking the goddamn domain. Yeah. Woo! Did you ever sit with those guys before you ever did all that stuff? You ever actually meet them?
No, I made a, you know, naive assumption that I was dealing with a group of sincere truth seekers, and, you know, recommended to me, and it looked like they for a good period of time, you know, we worked well harmoniously together, but it was when I became less and less enchanted with the Thermite song and dance. By June, I really wasn't any longer emphasizing it at all, but rather all of our disproofs of the government's account. And then by November, I was getting turned on to Judy's site when we did that show where I'd taken a look at her site and we were talking about it. And I was out in Tucson and then started talking about how this really so expanded the explanandum, what it is we have to explain, that it was obvious.
They screwed you out there in Arizona, man. I saw that first night, they stuck you out on the corner. I think they even had a pole between you and everybody else or something, or it looked like it.
Well, when I gave, I gave two lectures out in Tucson where I was talking about how the possibility of some kind of high-tech or directed energy weapon could have been used, and because the criticism had been made since my interview with Judy on Saturday by a fellow named Ralph Holmholt, that there isn't a, that you need a cable to bring all that that power up to a satellite, and it's a ridiculous thought. It occurred to me, well, the Building 7 was erected over these two enormous electrical generators. Maybe the power source was there. So I floated that idea, since it still remains the only conjecture I'm aware of that ties together the late destruction of Building 7 with the earlier destruction of the other buildings. And I still think it has some degree of plausibility, but I can't claim it's been proven. The point is just that coming up with ideas in the first place is the hardest part of scientific research, and I've been astonished that people who claim to be scientists, who claim to use the scientific method, in fact are attempting to suppress it and constrain it. To me, that is the strongest possible indictment that they are hypocrites and insincere and are not really interested in discovering what happened on 9/11.
They're more interested in, even that, it's like they're just taking the words and bantering them around the scientific method. And if you don't submit it to my journal, and now you have to go get a journal. So and then what is the journal and who is your peers? And I think that's where he knows he can't get that through a peer of his, where his nuclear.
Well, I'm very upset with the whole evolution of the journal, because I pointed out to Steve early on that the key to having a successful journal is having a first-rate editorial board, that he need a lot of hard science types. I suggest that he go to the spine, that, Society of Professionals who are investigating the events of 9/11 that A.K. Dewdney created, but he never did, and he has been really, in my opinion, very preferential to persons who share his own point of view. So then having a paper reviewed by the Journal of 9/11 Studies is having his buddies rubber stamp it. It's embarrassing to me, having spent a huge amount of time in dealing with referee journals, having spent 10 years with one and founding another journal and 10 years editing it, and yet having an online journal to this day at assassinationresearch.com. I cannot endorse the way in which that journal is run.
Well, he's a real abrasive person, I think. He's abrasive to me. Sophia, actually, and right here, I think I'm a more abrasive person, but when you look at him, he's more abrasive. He's just looking, he comes out of here, and he's got a nice smile and goes, "It's the science, Rick. Fermite did it." He gave me that line in L.A. I was like,
"Wow." Rick, I took a serious look at his last paper on thermite, and the claim to use scientific method, and went through it rather thoroughly. In fact, I spent a whole program on it. We have the transcript now about it, taking it apart. And not only does he doesn't prove that thermite was even used. He claims he has these little iron droplets, as it were, that are in dots, but that suggested that the steel was turned into dust. I mean, there you have remnants of the steel whose principal ingredient is iron in the dust. That just means there was some mechanism or device for pulverizing the building that included pulverizing the steel and turning it into dust. And he's looking at a sample of the dust, but he doesn't have other ingredients that ought to be present if they actually had involved thermite. And he now is very cautiously expressing his position as saying his findings are consistent with thermite, but not that they were actually caused by thermite, because that's something he cannot prove.
Well, his source of information also was Janice, and if you ever met her, she's a nice old lady, like your old aunt,
Stand by, Rick. We'll be right back. Okay. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays. And am I here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? He's just returned from Morocco, and I hope to have him as my guest on the show on Thursday to discuss his excellent adventure. Meanwhile, my guest today is Rick Siegel, who is responsible for two of the most important documentaries on 9/11, namely 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken. And Rick and I are discussing different aspects of 9/11 and research on 9/11. And if anyone would like to call in with a question for Rick or for me, please do so at 1-800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. Rick, we were talking about what the dust sample, and you were saying how the lady who provided it was a very nice lady.
Yeah,
but,
I met her in 2005 when I was there to release the first 9/11 eyewitness, September 11th. And she's a nice lady, like an auntie type. Very lonely woman, though. She just wanted people to come up and visit and talk stories to them. And she told about how her apartment was already cleaned. I don't know if she collected anything because they made everybody abandon their apartments and they cleaned it up. Then they let people come back. Well, anything was cleaned. I don't think you were allowed.
We can't quite hear you, Rick. Repeat that.
Okay, everybody was evacuated from that area, and all those apartments were sucked and cleaned dry because of all that powder that was poisonous. And they knew it was poisonous, even if they told people it was okay.
You mean they went into the apartments and vacuumed them?
Oh, yeah, everybody had vacuumed, but they couldn't get everything. But they most certainly got all the major stuff out, and I'm sure that her apartment was cleaned also. I never got to the apartment, but she was that close, yeah. But I pictured her, she didn't offer us any kind of evidence or anything like that in 2005. And I think Jones was not part of the, there's no way he was a part of the 9/11 truth until Christmas of that year, right?
Maybe move the mic a little closer to your mouth, Rick, but we're still having a little trouble hearing. Go ahead.
All right. How about now?
It's a little better.
Enough. All right, so I think it was Christmas when Jones came in on 9/11 Truth somewhere after that in 2005. So in September, she wasn't offering any kind of stuff where she had any dust samples or anything like that. And I would be wary. I think if you want the dust samples, there are plenty of them around. There's plenty of results that come from people where you could get those dust samples. And I don't think anyone is. I think that would have showed up a long time ago and how it shows in her apartment.
Well, he seems to be dealing with the same minuscule dust sample. I mean, he's got one or two samples of dust from the same source. That seems to be quite bizarre. He should be looking for hundreds of samples, I would surmise.
Right.
Should be taken from a wide variety of locations.
Right.
So that, you know, I mean, this is tainted from scratch because he's got too small a sample. Maybe Steve doesn't think statistically, but anyone with rudimentary understanding of the nature of random sampling understands that a sample of one is not an adequate sample. It can't be or qualify as a suitable basis for drawing inferences because you don't know, for example, what properties it might have that were there already as part of the background versus those that were added as a result of the causal process you're studying. And I just find it difficult to believe that Steve Jones wants to place all this weight on this minuscule sample, which doesn't even establish the presence of thermite, and yet he keeps talking as though it did. It's very embarrassing, in my opinion. But an awful lot on Blogger, for example, on 9/11 Blogger, they practically worship the dust the man deals with.
Right. Yeah, and they don't want to go anywhere else either. And I think we are if we end up somewhere else, because in the end, it's like I presented all the stuff to my father, and I look at him as the middle of America. And when he looked at it all, he goes, yeah, but what are you trying to say? It's like you can't, you're pointing to huge amounts of people that and what can you do? And the only thing that you can do is basically turn over the governments, or you have somebody like Ron Paul who could actually get in and do what he says he can do, but that can't happen because there is what they call false opposition. He'll get his 5%, 10% of the votes that people think they had almost a voice, but in the end they'll get nothing. So.
Well, you know, Ron, the Republican leadership, such as the head of the Republican Party in Michigan, are trying to stifle Ron Paul to suppress him and not even allow him to appear on the same platform with the other nine. So,
And he was really a Republican, because I often looked at, like, people when they talk to me, they say, "Well, oh, you're a constitutional, conservative." And I went, "Well, yes, I am. I like the Constitution. I like the way it was written, and I think that our country hasn't been under the Constitution since 1860, I think it was. So, and since then, it's been a corporation. And since we don't have a Constitution, the only thing the president ever said was, don't leave that plain piece of paper in my face, because basically he's working as the head of a corporation and not anything to do with a organic republic, which is what we're supposed to be. And that's the basic problem. So 9/11 has to come around to that because like Eisenhower's trying to warn, we've been taken over from the inside. And all those, everybody in there's got to be fired. It doesn't even matter if they try to do good. It's, you don't need it. You don't even want to question it. It's like, what do you need the government for? That's a fraud from 2,000 years. Before that, it was bullies. So I think that their self-government is when people take care of it themselves, and they always did a better job than when a government took it over. So and that American government was supposed to be like that, a very limited government, not taking anything, and then your states were supposed to protect you from that federal government, but they soon gave everything up because of that money business, so got to get rid of those banks. Jackson said it, repudiate all debts. No, you need Collins, 800
255-5791. Yes, yes.
Did we get any
call-ins
yet? No, huh?
No, yeah. They'll let me know when they come in, Rick. What do you think that he's done? I mean, if you think Ron Paul is really just sort of there to... the convention was convened on May 14, 1787... And on they had a quorum on May 25th. So we've had the document around since 1787.
Right. Yeah, but it's null and void after it was finished in 1860 when the Congress and the United States of America disintegrated. Out of it came two nations. One was called the Confederate Union, and the other was called the Union.
You know, this was the point you were making. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. And it's, if you look, it never ended. Well, at that point, it's just, I keep pointing to people. I go, well, we did to the South what we're doing to Iraq.
The Civil War was actually not fought over whether or not slavery was illegal, but rather whether the states could secede from the Union so that the...
No, it wasn't even that. No one was ever charged with any treason, nothing. It was fought over the ports, harbors, and forts. Because that was the whole reason. That's like Fort Sumter was, oh, man, it's like if people understood the history. This is where Education 2000, No Child Left Behind, has left our country in total ruins. We had to memorize all this stuff when we were in school. And but when we, after they ended the Constitution, 1860, when Congress went and ended themselves, two nations come out. When two nations come out, you can't go back and have another nation again. You have to reform a new one. They have reformation acts, but it's the same thing they did to Iraq. They went down, they took over with a military force. Remember Fort Sumter? Gunshot was fired, that war started. Get it?
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Rick Siegel. From 911researchers.com and 911 Eyewitness, 911 Eyewitness Hoboken. And Rick, we do have our first caller, Wesley from Idaho. Wesley, this is Jim. You're on the Dynamic Duo.
Hello, James. Thank you for taking my call. I tried to call last week when you had Anita on from LaRouche Foundation. I hope.
Yes, go ahead.
I hope it doesn't seem like I am taking this conversation off point, but I have to say, any speaker that wants to maintain my attention is not going to say when NASA put man on the moon, because that's another conspiracy. Anyone that wants to take up the study of frauds our government has perpetrated upon us, that's one. And also, you do a great job on Wellstone and JFK. Allow me to turn your attention to Gus Grissom, America's number one astronaut at about the time we were to put man on the moon. He was probably killed by NASA because he wasn't going to go along with the fraud. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Well, I'm just going to say that I don't know of any evidence to contradict what you're saying. On assassinationscience.com, which is a public issues website, I do invite attention to a lot of work that Jack White has done on the anomalies in the NASA photographs, and also to a report from the Soviet Union that our trip to the moon appears to have been a fraud. It's a rather large task to undertake, but I've been very impressed by video like a conspiracy theory, did man go to the moon, or a funny thing happened on the way to the moon, both of which it seems to me provide rather telling evidence suggesting that it would have been extremely difficult, if not impossible, for us to actually make that trip. But, you know, with my hands full with so many other projects, this is not one that I have sought to pursue. I didn't recall that subject coming up, by the way, when I had the fellow from the LaRouche organization on, but he must have mentioned something in passing that I didn't pick up on.
It was a female. Her name was Anita. I tried to call in, but once again, what I'm trying to say is that anyone that gets up there and tries to maintain my attention and then just drops it in passing as some kind of illustration or example that when we put man on the moon, you know, that's a fraud. It's a lie, and a number of people were probably killed by NASA just to continue this fraud. There was a safety inspector for NASA who delivered a 500-page report on the feasibility of going to the moon, and he was found dead a week later, and his 500-page report was lost forever.
I've heard of that, too. I wish someone would turn it up. God knows that would be extremely valuable. I do think that there's a huge task that confronts us about what happened in relation to those alleged moon landings, and that there's an awful lot of very suspicious evidence suggesting that it didn't or couldn't have taken place.
Another good film is, was it only a paper moon? And your guest he had on here recently, aluminum planes were what? He's suggesting what, it bounced off a steel building? Well, I'm no physics professor, but I know that at 500 miles an hour, aluminum can most certainly break right through a steel building.
I agree that common sense physics, or what you might think, you know, intuitively is the case, doesn't necessarily turn out to be the case. I mean, we have birds, for example, causing massive damage to aircraft, and we had that chunk of foam that you would never think would damage a shuttle sufficiently to bring it down, but in fact that was the way it appears to have played out. Rick's here and has a couple of comments, I think, on things you've been saying. Rick, would you like to comment on any of Wesley's remarks?
I've been trying to find out, Wesley, like just about how much, how fast does an aluminum baseball bat have to go before it can slice through steel like butter? Because I didn't see any planes, so, and if we go to the scientific method, then show me the planes. When they can't show me the planes, you can talk about what's on TV. No one there, I was there, no one saw planes. No New Yorker will tell you that they saw planes other than John Albanese, whose United Airlines was burned in his brain forever, but that changed to American Airlines. But since that doesn't exist, it changed finally to American. But there are no real witnesses to planes. There were witnesses to bombs in New York, and all the radio reports that are on my tape, and there's no alteration of these radio reports. There's no people saying that. There were people talking about explosions. But I'll take it if you can. But what I got to do is see how if that video is true, that they show, and that's where the fakery people come in. It's like, how fast am I going to have to swing just a baseball bat, an aluminum baseball bat, which is harder than a wing on a plane, and you don't fill it with any fuel that might explode. Instead, let's just see how fast does a baseball bat have to go before it can slice through steel. And when you start to think about that, I think you're going to come up with an answer you're not going to be too comfortable with. So that's the problem with it. You know, what they showed me on the video just can't be. It wouldn't bounce off, but it's going to explode on that building. I don't see how fast the baseball bat could ever go. And we had arguments in the closer-knit circles that people, it's like, we just want to make, what's the formula? Where, how fast does an aluminum baseball bat, which is, I think, going to be a stronger structure than the wing of a plane, but take a wing of a plane, you should go buy a Boeing plane junker out of Arizona where they junk those things and wing it as fast as we can at a couple of box beams, steel, and see how fast it has to go before it finally slices through like butter, like we saw on these videos that they give us. Because, boy, I can't think of how fast that aluminum baseball, because it's going to shatter before, no matter what, it can't reach the speed that it's going to penetrate. And it can't penetrate. Not across like that. Slicing like a knife. It doesn't do that. That's Leyland. If that happens, then Leyland gets elected. And we don't need any Leyland Learman. His grandfather was a skull and bones guy getting in there. And now he's a leader of 9/11 Truth. And not that. You see, Jim, it's like so weird out there. You got...
Hey, we'll be right back with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Vesser, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Stand by. Today, my special guest is Rick Siegel, and we've been discussing the state of 9/11 research. I don't know if Wesley is still with us. Wesley, are you still there?
Yeah, one more short comment, if I could.
Go right ahead.
Another thing, for speakers to maintain my attention, they can't perpetuate this lie, this Holocaust, this blood libel against the German people. There was no Holocaust. I turn you to the last two recent issues of the Idaho Observer, where I wrote two short articles. Just as 9/11 was a blood libel on the Muslim people, so is a Holocaust of Jewish people a blood libel on the German people. I'll close with that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Wesley. Thanks for calling. Rick, you know, sometimes I'm puzzled about the Holocaust denial business. I mean, it's very different than 9/11, of course. I mean, for those who tend to suggest, as one reporter did out in Chandler, that 9/11 researchers or Holocaust deniers or like Holocaust deniers is quite frankly absurd. I mean, Holocaust deniers were denying that their government, in this case the German government, had perpetrated genocide. Holocaust, 9/11 researchers, however, are affirming that our government committed mass murder. So they couldn't be more opposite. And I find it puzzling when that's brought up. Moreover, of course, I mean, I was born in 1940, and I grew up with all those newsreels of emaciated bodies and stacks of corpses at concentration camps. I can't imagine how many I saw. But it was enormously convincing evidence of the reality of the Holocaust. And when I was 15 years old, I did a bicycle tour, youth hostel tour in England, Belgium, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and France. And although I was ill that day, I didn't feel well that day, and now I regret it profoundly, everyone else went off to a concentration camp. I tried to call which, maybe it was Dachau. And they came back and gave me vivid stories of the crematoria and the smokestacks and, you know, the way in which the railroads were all lined up and everything else, very much as, for example, Schindler's List portrays it. And I've never had any reason whatsoever in my lifetime to doubt the reality of the Holocaust, although I recognize the legitimacy of debates about, say, the precise numbers of how many persons of different nationality or religion or ethnic background were killed. But that the Holocaust was a reality is nothing I've ever had any cause to doubt.
No, I don't either. It's a matter of most of these people, I think, are just they're coming out of the woodworks to join in to try and push it because there's some Israeli involvement. And, of course, once you get into the bankers, you're stuck with this cult that have done this, and there's a lot of Jewish bankers. But it's not,
yeah, yeah.
You're in dead water, and here's a whole cult of people. Here's a family. In my life, I've been able to work with the DuPont family, and I got to see how they actually operate. And they have all these families. They actually put out a family book, which looks like your high school or your college book, where you have all the different people, everyone who's born, everyone who's died, where they're working, what they're doing, you know, how to contact them, and anyone in the family you can contact, and they all work together for one goal: to enhance the family fortune and to make the estate grow. So anything, this is where you got your compartmentalization. So if I call and I tell you, look, you're going to insert this tape at this time while you're working there at Channel 11, you're going to insert that tape at that time, and you don't even know what's on it. But you're told not to do it, you're just there, you put the tape in, you go back out, you're partying. And that's how these guys operate, because I work with some of them. And they don't know what they're doing. This uncle calls. Time to go out. Doesn't matter whether you're partying or anything's happening. You go out and do what they tell you. You don't even know how it's put together. You've done your job, and there's this book. When I started DuPont book, there was about 7,000 in the family already. And the DuPonts went way back into France. They're a very, very old family. They were invited over by Thomas Jefferson. They invited them over, gave them three states if they would make the gunpowder here. So it's
so I got to see the letter.
You're getting faint.
I got to see the actual letter that they sent.
Uh-huh.
Ernie DuPont to come over and do that. DuPont's very heavy. They're the only banks. They're as heavy as the Rothschilds, and they're so private in the United States you don't even know. They could control everything. They own created GM to crush Ford. You know, he did that with the Morgan Bank. So we're living under all this corruption. That's where everyone has to wake up.
Well, just to pick up on this fellow's phone call, you know, since attacking 9/11 researchers as Holocaust deniers is a move that is commonly made but has no foundation or substance at all, what are some of the other bases for attacks? I mean, you know, O'Reilly went after me for being both a kook and for hating my country, and I want to say, you know, is the guy such a mental midget that he can't differentiate between criticism of the government and love for your country? I mean, it's because I care about my country that I'm critical of this administration, and yet and O'Reilly would conflate the two, so that if you're critical of Bush, you're critical of the United States of America, displaying an astounding incapacity to separate the two.
Yeah, well, but what you think Fox and Murdoch and these stations are anything different than in history the news has ever been, which is basically a mouthpiece of the government. And if you're not, you don't even look at. I think that's what your friend there, where you went to New York to do your hard fire, Rick.
Oh, yeah, Ronald Rick.
He'd like to be there. He wants to get a little more money. He's, like, low level, and he wants to get, you know, a real desk instead of that plastic-coated thing that he's on. You know that his cameraman that was shooting you, actually his father had an office in the building when it went down.
Really?
And he, yeah, because these were people who were doing my business plan. So his father, I'm looking at the credits, and the cameraman is his son. And I got to meet him. Jason is his name. So I'm Jason the cameraman. There. Hi, Jason. I'm sure the debunkers will get this. So it's like, yeah, that was part of it. And Jason, I saw, he was on there. And his father's there. I'm surprised they don't even say it's the same like Mark Cuban, who knows me very well from 9/11. He was called in to invest in Loose Change. And, like, he knew from day one that I had my footage. He called me on the 12th of September, 2001, to see if he could get the footage in high-definition TV quality. So Mark was well aware. He was there listening to my stuff. I think it went by.
Do you have any idea why he has backed out of the project?
If you look at what Mark Cuban did, at that time, and you can read about it in Wire, because they tried to make fun of me, but I said, Mark Cuban got $5 billion for his broadcast network, which didn't do much more than resell TV advertising time. He sold it to Yahoo for $5 billion. Yahoo took it and buried it. Now, you take $5 billion, like anything with broadcast.com, it goes to this Yahoo Video. Have you ever heard of Yahoo Video? Does anyone use Yahoo Video? Is it anything? So, you know what money laundering is? $5 billion, and they give it to the kid. All right, now he's an old man. He's out there. Nice Jewish boy, Mark Cuban. A name like that, would you think he was Jewish? Anyway, nice Jewish boy. I was associated with him for a long time because he was in the same business as I. We were both in the broadcast industry on the Internet, and we both started out I was a little earlier than him, actually. So, but I watched what was happening, and I watched how they took him in, and he got his billion. So now, if you want to know why, well, we'll do it after the break.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Rick Siegel. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, we're concluding my conversation with Rick Siegel, a leading investigator of 9/11, who has created two of the most important documentaries on that subject, 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken, and who maintains a website at 911researchers.com. Rick, I'd like to take this opportunity to give you the floor to just explain or spell out what you think is most important for those who come to 9/11 research, what they should look out for, the pitfalls, and how they should orient themselves to try to figure out what actually happened.
Wow, the pitfalls. Well, that you're going to be led down the wrong streets and controlled in all the areas. If you're not in an open field where you can look everywhere, then somebody's funneling you down a direction. There's no way a moving circle is going to make any change in this when you get down to the facts of who the perpetrators are. Am I coming across okay?
Yeah, good.
Okay. when you come across the time where you're going to find the perpetrators, it's going to be such a broad spectrum that's going to lead you from everywhere from the government, who is definitely corrupt. And I have no problems in saying that. Anyone who says the government is good hasn't read a history book and hasn't even looked outside their doorway. And if you can find anywhere in history where there's a good government, please point it out, because it doesn't exist today, so how did it exist back then? Anyway, when you get down to that and you realize that the media is all full of crap, and how would they do it? Well, you try and print a story if you're up there as a writer, and you'll see how quickly it is that your stories don't get printed and won't make the light of day, and you won't make your mortgage if you don't do the right thing. And if anyone is from anywhere in a corporation, you know that this is how it runs. So since you're under this kind of gun, there's also a problem that you're going to face, that there's nothing you can do because you have a mortgage and a house and a wife and a kid, and you've got things, and you can't get up and break that mold. So what's going to happen is, until 40% of the people are so utterly suppressed, there's going to be no movement. And if you're going to let it get to that, then we're going to be in big trouble. So we have to really get somebody who is like Ron Paul in there, whether he's controlled opposition or not. If he doesn't get in, then you just have to stand up, because this is not, you know, I got to ask you, that's if you, when you're born and you get stuck with a certain set of laws that were dealt to you, not by you waking up and going, you know what, this is what's right and this is what's wrong, but this is what a bunch of drunken idiots sold out their votes and did all kinds of stupid things for hundreds of years, and now you're dealt this book of laws and you have to live by them. What's logical or good about this? You know what I mean? that's where I think it has to go. 9/11, it's like, what the hell are we doing under all this crap?
Let me offer some suggestions and see if you agree that a couple of documentaries, for example, worth taking a look at in getting oriented include 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken. That a couple of websites worth visiting are 911scholars.org and 911researchers.com. And a couple of sites worth avoiding in general are 911blogger.com and 911 and stj911.com, which is a Scholars for Truth and Justice website. And I'm going to throw in this Journal of 9/11 Studies, because in my opinion it betrays the principles for which a journal of that kind should be intended. So it's become a kind of a hack attack vehicle for defending a very narrow view about what happened on 9/11 and for constraining research into areas that might actually carry us closer to the truth. Would you agree with those endorsements, Rick?
I would. It's like but sometimes they're humorous. But what you're saying is, if they're going to go out and you want somebody to go learn, so you end up on those sites, it's like they get some of the truth, but it's like they're going to be worked into doing, like what...
Yeah, you're going to have to unlearn a lot of what you thought you learned, because so much of what they're saying is really incomplete or inaccurate or warped, so...
Well, even then, it's like not what they're saying, it's more what they're telling you not to do. Don't go here. It's like, this is fine. Okay, fire, ice. This is good. We're finished. We can do it. But there's nothing finished. I mean, the closest thing, at least the 9/11 scholars, is going and actually doing some suits. They're setting up within that legal framework. Okay, I'd rather break that legal framework, because it's bogus. Even Liebhardt says that he knows that it's all a fraud. Everything in law is based on a fiction. So you have to talk about things that aren't true. Like in law, just because you exist, you're part of the crime. You know, if you're standing there, you get hit by a car, or sitting in a park bench, you get hit by a car, you're 20% at fault because you were alive and you were sitting in that park bench. You laugh because you understand their logic. So you have that piece of logic, and because you laugh, they go, see? And that's it. Now in fiction, that works. And of course, in a real law, a natural law, which is what really our law is supposed to be, it's a joke. It's like, come on. You hit the guy sitting in the park bench. Okay, yeah, I owe him. No. He's 20% because he's alive. That's how the lawyers work it out. The law, because it's fiction. The fiction is actually, you're right. Well, if I wasn't alive, yes, you're correct. Nothing would have happened because he would have just hit the park bench. And then they go, see? Now that's 20% of the problem. So you were alive. What are you doing, living? I mean, that's how they do actually accidents. Like if you're parked in a car, and you're automatically 20% liable. So,
Rick, let me ask, for the sake of our audience, what do you think is the greatest threat to the nation for the future? Would it be the, you know, performance of another false flag operation to suspend the Constitution? And if so, what form do you think it might take?
I don't know if they need that. I think they're already doing it. They're taking it away in the elections. We already got them voting in the Democrats and nothing changed, you know? It's like if people will just sit there and do nothing. So I think they've already voted them. The president's really taking the power. You think he needs something really drastic because he's going to hand it off to whoever is going to be elected anyway. They already have that planned out. They want one of the Democrats, probably Hillary's going to take over again. And everyone's going to be happy just like they were that the Democrats won again.
And yet, Rick, you know, I mean, I look back at the Clinton administration, and everything was in such better shape. I mean, we had a lot of constitutional law. We had an attempt to balance the budget. We were heading toward trillion-dollar surpluses. We weren't invading other nations in violation of international law. We weren't torturing prisoners. We weren't trying to politicize the Department of Justice. I mean, it seems to me we were a whole lot better off under Clinton than we've ever been under Bush.
Well, Clinton was the start of it. You know, it started in the 60s, and they had to dumb down the students first. Look what they're doing to the students. I don't know if you have any children or if you know what they're doing, but the difference in the school today and why you have Columbines and things like that is that they've replaced all of the authority of the
into the mic.
The authority of the professors, they've invested that into peer pressure and into a homogenous peer pressure. In other words, if I was a goofball, I'm the class clown, well, the whole class stays after school because I made my joke. And now it's like you're going to end up with a Columbine shooting because everyone's hating me because I like to make jokes. So I'd definitely be one of those guys.
Well, Rick, listen, time's gone by too fast. I want to thank you for coming on the show. A great pleasure. I want to encourage everyone to visit 911researchers.com. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. You've been listening to The Dynamic Duo.